see.
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking. You get out there, Mr. Midnight, and you knock him dead.
Melbourne writer-director duo Colin and Cameron Cairns continue to bring fresh and exciting stories to film. The nightmarish ode to the talk shows of the 70s is at its core a tale about the cult of personality and the price of fame, with plenty of supernatural thrills along the way. Late Night with the Devil will be in Australian cinemas April 11. Colin and Cameron, thank you so much and welcome to the For Your Reference podcast.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for having us, Katie.
First off, I just want to say congratulations on a gorgeous, great, all-encompassing film.
Thank you.
And it's so exciting to be able to talk about it today. My partner, OT, we have a podcast together and we're still together. I think that's like a level up from IKEA shopping together.
Right. Well, we've done three films together and somehow, we still want to do more.
Exactly. But premiering at South by Southwest in 2023 and making its way around the world in film festivals, including Sydney Film Festival, which we're in our 30s, so even the 8 p.m. screening is a bit too late for us. Unfortunately, we did miss it during Sydney Film Festival, but we're so glad we had the chance to watch it. And it's so interesting doing interviews because usually this is the time to, you know, be like, oh, these are things that I was wondering, but like everything was in it and I'm just happy to be here.
Wow. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Job's done.
All right. So no pressure. We can just, okay, we can just have some banter.
You can tell us how much you keep saying how much you love it. We're like, that's fine.
Well, I think even just talking about like working together, and I've seen the interviews and it's probably annoying hearing about like brother duos, but you know, shout out to the Filippo brothers. I had the chance to interview them for Talk to Me as well. Yeah. So it's an exciting time, you know. But how is it like working together? Are you full on like MMA fighting each other like the Filippo brothers, or like do you just know each other's strengths and you know where to go together?
Yeah, I think it's more of Colin B.
Yeah.
If that's that's the latter, right?
That's the latter. Colin B. Well, we've seen the Filippos in action and we've met the guys and seen their Q&As, and they're constantly trying to outdo each other and, you know, and shit talk each other. And it's hilarious. I know it's in good jest, but it's interesting. We're different. We're pretty laid back. Like we're trying to, you know, we're trying to be energetic today. But normally we're
very enthusiast and don't care about anything.
But it's so interesting because you guys are chill, but this goes full balls to the wall. Full pedal to the metal sort of film, right?
Of course, yeah.
Look, our dynamic is, I don't know. We get on. Okay, you know, I don't think that really helps.
Yeah.
And films has always been the great leveler for us, you know. Any differences we might have kind of put aside because we have this shared love of cinema. So
the greater good of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little bit of a shorthand, right?
Absolutely. You know, we don't need to say anything to each other. It's just a little nod or a look.
like that.
And I think on set it just makes things run really smoothly. We're just across everything, and no one sort of needs to go to both of us at the same time to get a question answered. We can spread ourselves a bit thinner.
Yeah.
There's no like cloak and dagger shit going on like in the background?
Not at all. No, we're humans, we've got egos, but for us it's the work comes before that. So I think that's a good thing because people see that we can kind of either come to a consensus, or we might have a little discussion. It's never ever heated. We might disagree occasionally, but they can see that we can come together and come up with a solution, and it means the rest of our cast and crew can also come to us and have a, and they know it's not going to get, you know, there's never an ego thing on our sets. I think it's because it's pretty much an ego-free zone the way we work. Mm-hmm. The work, it's the film comes first, the story. What's the best way of saying whatever it is you're trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that comes really great to the tone. I think the tone can really stretch the realms of where you can go from a storytelling point of view. And at least from watching Late Night with the Devil, it didn't take itself too seriously. So it was like we were able as an audience be able to stretch perhaps believability, and in places where it's like, what just happened, you know?
Yeah.
So how was it working on that sort of tone? Because you don't want a full sort of clown show. We kind of just we just finished a whole run of watching Scorsese films. Yeah. So King of Comedy is like at the front of mind here. But how was it on trying to balance the tone of this is a late night show, all of the background scenes production, but we're also not going to take ourselves too seriously about it?
That's a good question. I mean, it looks, it's probably not as hard for us as it might seem, because I think it's just a sensibility, a taste thing. And when you've worked on a script for that long and you know what you got, you want people to buy into that world.
Yeah.
Feel credible, but you also know that it's completely far-fetched and outrageous what the premise is. So it's just it's knowing when to go for a bit of levity, but then that buys you a bit more confidence, I think, to go into those weirder, strange, darker places as well. So
your mention of King of Comedy is, you know, that's a perfect reference, because you go to the cast and you say, you know, these are the kinds of films that have inspired us and that one way or another find their way into our film. Yeah. So, you know, not that they needed a viewing list or anything, but you sort of, you know, you share that stuff.
But we had one.
We did.
We had a long view.
I don't think anyone watched it.
No. But I think what people see, we're making a horror movie, but that list was Network, King of Comedy, A Face in the Crowd. It was all these films about, you know, media and ambition and cult of personality, all that stuff. So, horror films, definitely. You don't, like, the cast didn't have to worry about that. I don't think we ever wanted them to think they were in a horror movie. I don't think any character in a horror movie thinks they're in a horror movie. They're just living their lives and trying to get whatever it is that they want in that story.
I'm doing acting now. I'm scared.
So hence, you know, there's no real jump scares or anything like that in the film, because we wanted to feel, it needed to feel grounded in a certain reality.
Yeah.
Reality is a talk show, which is not real anyway. It is already and a bit frothy and bubbly, and there's jazz music playing in the background. What's scary about that?
It's more of like a insidious, seeping, simmering sort of feeling, I would say, throughout the film. But
that banality of evil as well. It's just like, where's the disturbing stuff coming from in this slightly brightly lit. That's a spoonerism. Brightly lit environment, you know. So they're the challenges, but also the things you really embrace.
And I think, like, because even talking about the tone and like bringing the audience in, which I think it was immersive enough to be like, okay, this is where, yes, it's not in reality, but this is the world.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about skeptics versus the believers, because generally in a lot of things, you're not going to catch me getting scared. I'm pretty much a skeptic on a lot of things, but I buy into the matrix of films. Like, if you tell me this is the world, these are the rules, I'm very much in there. And I really love the way it was explored in Late Night with the Devil, because we have literal characters that embody a skeptic and a believer, and potentially maybe where the audience might be going as well.
Yeah.
I want to hear a little bit about that, if that's okay.
Sure. But you've said it so perfectly. You just nailed it. But you're right. I mean, if it's important to, I think it's great for the audiences who might be of different sort of, you have different belief systems, to feel like there's someone in the ensemble who kind of represents them to a degree, makes you into it a bit more. But it also makes sense, this is the beauty of it, that's what you would do on a show like that. That's how you get an audience engaged. You know, you want conflict.
Yeah.
So get the psychic, get the parapsychologist, get the girl, you know, get the psych, So it brings conflict to it, but it does bring different points of view that I think are in all, a lot of horror movies play with that stuff anyway, you know. Do you believe? Can we make you change your mind? And so, and that, you know, that's, I think that's part of the fun of this experience.
Are either of you one or the other in regards to being skeptics or believers, or does it depend?
Cole is a true believer. And I'm an acolyte of James Randi. I'm a skeptic.
Yeah. We're both skeptics. I mean, on the spectrum of, you know, believer, skeptic, Cam's like all the way here. I'm just a couple of millimeters towards the up, but not much. But I, you know, like James Randi character, I think he's brilliant, and he was obviously a great magician. This is the real life version of our guy Carmichael Haig. But there's something also a little bit troubling about those characters that they so dedicate their lives to unmasking these two-bit, you know, psychics and magicians. Really hacks. And we all know it's a joke. And even the people who pay good money to see them kind of know that it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
They've dedicated their lives to, you know, bringing them down. I think there's a little part of those characters as well that wants to believe. Why pursue these people?
Because unfortunately, I am the skeptic, but I did like, and then he was being like really gruff. And I turned to OT and I'm like, is that me? And he's like, yeah. That's you.
Yeah, it becomes a point where it just gets a bit nasty and it's a bit, little bit sadistic. Like, I mean, yeah, they're charlatans and some of them are, you know, they're just outright con artists, but some of them believe in what they're doing. And, you know, okay, there might be the odd case of people throwing away their life savings, but really it's like it's $20 and to have some tarot cards read or someone look into a crystal ball. Like, how harmful is it really? So, yeah,
exactly. It's really interesting because I'm usually like, you can't get me in the third act sort of gal. Like if there's any sort of like twist, I want to talk about twists and obviously no spoilers and that sort of thing. But I got to a moment where I'm like, okay, I've got this temper. Like I'm cool with this film. There's a film with Rebecca Hall called The Night House. Mm. There aren't many films that get me, but that was one that I was like, oh, I say I can't do twists, but you got me. And this film, Late Night with the Devil, did that with me because there was a moment where, okay, we're riding on, like, we know where we're going. Mm. And then it shifted in a way that I don't think either myself or OT were expecting. How far in the cutting room floor was that? Or was that always from the start when you know to take your.
Which bit are we talking about?
I guess you're talking about.
Can we
climax? Is that.
We can edit it out, but I'm talking.
Give us a clue, like a visual, an image or something that helps.
It's literally at the ending and our understanding of his reality.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes.
Without spoiling it? Okay.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It took us a lot of goes to get to that point.
Mm.
I think, you know, it was maybe only until the sort of the last few drafts that we'd settled on an ending that felt right to us, felt like it would be satisfying for an audience, but also leave the audience questioning things a little bit. You know, I think they're the twists that work for me in movies where it's not just a, you know, a kind of gimmicky thing. It's like, oh, okay, it's just been a dream all this time. You know, I think the twists that work have a little more depth to them and then make you sort of reconsider everything before it. So,
and I think, if you go back and, you know, and a Sixth Sense or something like that, which was the classic, you go back and watch it the second time and you're suddenly watching a different film, you realize, that character's eyes, and it has this whole other layer of meaning. Don't know if we quite do that, but we found people like just coming back from the US. People, we went to did a few Q and A's, and people coming up to us afterwards saying they'd seen the film, already seen it three times, and it's like, oh, I get a little bit more each time, which is really cool. I mean, we were hoping that we would joke about it, you know, when we were cutting, saying, oh, people will say it gets better by the third screening, then the fourth one it kind of falls flat, and then it comes back, you know. But there's a You've got to earn that moment, haven't you? So, it feels like we did enough of the hard work up front to pull that off.
Oh, absolutely, because we were having a good time throughout. And then at the end, respectfully, I'm like, you motherfuckers. I was like, you got me. I love this. This is like top list. We should have like taken a nap to go to the 8 p.m. screening at Sydney Film Festival. But I'm wrapping up now. Thank you so much for your time. I'd like to end with our final question. We finish off our reviews with a recommendation. So what would you pair with Late Night with the Devil as a double feature?
Double feature. Can we do a Joe Dante film?
Yeah, let's do a Joe.
The one you always talk about.
Oh, The Howling.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Pair it up with The Howling because there's a few scenes in The Howling that sort of live in that
TV studio
world, particularly, you know, the final scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think also the period, you know, it's maybe, it was 80, 81, I think, The Howling. So it's set a few years after that fateful episode of Night Owls. I think they're also fun. You know, The Howling is fun. It's funny.
Yeah.
And it's a romp. And I think that's a good pairing.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, based on this, respectfully, I will follow you guys anyway. Thank you so much for your time, guys.
Yeah, great talking to you.
All the best.